Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 5, Episode 10, Rick Marai Jack. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Humbled by his newfound crow partners, Rick returns slightly chastened to Morty and the Smith family. Morty's put on about 50 pounds in 26 years, so they're off for a quick in-and-out adventure to the Citadel to de-age Morty and get back to easy, basic adventuring. But things are never that simple on the Citadel. Evil Morty makes his return appearance to deal out some harsh truths and seemingly newly minted canon before revealing his dastardly plan, the destruction of the central finite curve.
All right, Aaron, it's the season finale. How'd you think it ended?
I mean, like I said last episode, I love the Monster of the Week episodes, but you do get up a little bit bright and earlier for in the morning for a good old canon episode, and This was great. I'm glad that they take so long in between these installments, because every single time they come, it's like bigger and better than before. Like, how do they pay off? What's a Morty look like that can stand toe to toe with Rick? How does he talk? How does he act? And like, this is just really like, this is as good a villain speeches as anything I've ever seen. And like Die Hard, you know, it's just really good. It expands the canon. It confirms a lot of stuff we already knew, but gets a little bit more like Morty learning the truth at the same time we did is extra poignant because, you know, it humanizes Rick. But there's also just so many implications. My mind was blown. I thought it was a pretty funny episode too. But this episode goes pretty deep, and hits pretty hard on an emotional level. What'd you think?
Yeah, no, I'm with you, man. I do like, you know, interdimensional cables, and I do like, Jurassic Park homeless man exploding over the earth or whatever. I like all that stuff, but damn it, I also like canon stuff and the serialized television. This is good. Probably the biggest laugh I got out of these last two episodes was when Morty shows up looking 40 and just like his particular depiction of 40. I'm like, this is not what 40 has to be, but this is the 40 that Morty has chosen. And I don't know if that's like to trigger some kind of sympathy in Rick or what. I'm not sure why he chooses this particular depiction, but it was hilarious. I loved it.
Especially when we see potential Morty at 26, who is right? A fine strapping lad.
Yeah, like, looking good.
But then again, as being a, you know, reasonably fit 26, 27 year old to kind of decrepit 40s myself, it happens to the best of us.
Yeah, I'm about to pass over that mark myself. I hope that doesn't happen to me overnight. Is this just 40? Because
you're just hair, just beer gut. No, you're right. It's not inevitable. But and that's the question, is like, was obviously Morty's juicing this for maximum psychological impact.
Yeah.
You know, he said this is a naked attempt to manipulate him. So I don't know how much of that you can take as canon, but yeah, woof.
And then the central finite curve stuff that they do, I think we had like correctly deduced sort of what the central finite curve meant, right? It's you know, a subset of the rest of infinity, which itself is also infinite. You can't forget that part of it.
Yep.
But the way that they sort of use that as like a stand-in for, or not a stand-in, but they make it part of the way that Rick controls Morty, right? And this metaphor of him like breaking out past the central finite curve is him removing himself from the influence of Rick. And I think last episode, or was it earlier this episode, you asked about, because we're recording these back to back, you asked about like, what does a Morty who can stand up to Rick look like? And it's this Morty, it's the guy who just is over his shit, right? Like, that's the Morty that can stand up to Rick. And that was super interesting to see. It's not evil Morty. It's just a Morty who's had enough and is getting out of this pattern. And they represent it physically by him escaping the central finite curve.
Yeah, it's incredible. His line to Morty, it's like, you know, that's why I'm evil, because I just want out. And
in a universe that is constructed to service Rick, that is considered evil, right? Like, it's, yeah, I like that stuff.
Yeah, we got, because we talked some of these implications through earlier in the season about, like, you know, we started talking about what is canon in the show. And you know, I had this theory of, like, you know, this, our Rick might be, like there's, broadly speaking, two Ricks in the Infinity. There's the type of the Rick that didn't leave their wife,
mm-hmm.
To join the cosmic spanning rager that is the Rick's control of the universe. And they're the Ricks that did, you know, and we also thought that Central Finite Curve was that slice of Infinity where Ricks develop and, you know, Summers and Mortys develop and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we were really close to being right on both of those cases. But yeah, in each case, we just didn't go far enough.
Right.
That the Central Finite Curve is where the sum of the infinite universe is where Rick is the smartest man in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Which I got an asterisk I want to talk about here in a minute. And that possibly only one Rick ever, the Rickest Rick, actually chose to stay with his children. Or maybe the other Rick, because it's so rare that, like, the only other Rick we know in the canon that chose to stay and live with his Beth was captured by the Citadel of Ricks and squeezed for his adrenal daughter juice.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty fucked up that we, like, it, and it definitely cast Rick in kind of a heroic role. Like, everything was taken from him and he takes his planet-sized brain and gets vengeance on the universe and then tries to settle down with a Beth, but that, because of the other Ricks, hates him and mistrusts him. And
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like he's trying to do the best in a fucking dysfunctional, broken system, it seems like.
Yeah, but in the process of doing that is also perpetuating the dysfunction and abuse of that relationship, right? Onto Morty.
Because baseline, he's an alcoholic and has various other substance abuse problems, and that's a nightmare just on top of all the other trauma. But, you know, like, I think it's like a lot of people debated about whether Rick is a narcissist or not. I don't know that that is true or that I buy it anymore. I feel that's like that he's question. Just a very deeply traumatized person. He's like, a combat vet that's been through every atrocity imaginable, and he's just desensitized to it all.
So I wanted to ask you, like, in that context, in, like, the context of Rick being a narcissist, is that the case, or is that, did he create the Central Finite Curve because he's a narcissist who wants to have, like, all of the smartest Ricks, you know, every universe where Rick is the smartest being collected into one place that he can inhabit, or is he simply looking for revenge, you know, on that Rick? And so that's the utility of it. It's, well, if he can create a universe where all of the smartest Ricks are gathered, he can more easily find the Rick that must have killed his wife and daughter, potentially.
That sounds like a fantastic bridge into the main discussion part of the episode, which we'll get to right after this short break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, so you were asking before we took the break about like the nature of the finite curve and what does it actually mean? And I guess what I got from this episode is that Rick's one-man war, since he is the Rickest Rick, like he's undisputed, he's the most powerful, smartest, godlike Rick of them all. His rampage, one man rampage, caused it reminded me of the scene of like in the Anna. What is the anime version of the Matrix, the Animatrix, where the machines like didn't start the war, but they damn well finished it and brought humanity to its knees. That I think you're supposed to understand that like the Citadel is the Matrix that Rick has constructed to keep the fucking psychotic Ricks the hell away from him and busy with their own shit.
Yeah.
It's like literally he's built a prison for them because they're all just doing menial jobs and they're all trying to dominate each other. And it protects him because he at the end, like I thought that was such a great storytelling, the way they use the flashback sequence where like at the end he stops hunting down the Ricks and he just waits for them to come to him. And he's just sitting there drinking his bombed out garage, just plugging them as they're coming through the portal.
Yeah.
Like it saves Rick because Rick, after he, I guess, gave up his one man war against the Ricks, because like, what does it even look like when you're hunting an infinite Ricks?
Right.
And then decided like, you know what? I'm tired of fighting. I want to try to rebuild some semblance of my life. And he crashes into this universe's Beth's garage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the other fascinating thing. It's like, there's, I guess, a lot more canon to explore, but that's how I got it. That like this was Rick is the almighty impotent God and he's created I think that's what I got from Evil Morty. He even says it. It's like this is an infinite baby pin constructed around an infinite baby. And the only thing I think that I'm pushing against is like, I don't think that actually describes our Rick.
Well, I think that's the thing. There's only one Rick in the central finite curve, right? That's the point that I think evil, quote unquote, evil Morty is trying to make here, is that there aren't an infinite number of Ricks. There's one fucking Rick and he's an abuser and he's torturing you and he's using you. That is the one Rick. There are an infinite number of a single shit stain everywhere, right? But the shit stains are all the same.
Yes. But I don't know if that's literally true, because I think it's a metaphoric thing. It's like, these aren't like, you know, like all, he, that's his way of saying all Ricks are the same because they built this finite curve around it.
Exactly. But I think
the,
yeah,
the one thing that Evil Morty doesn't understand is that Rick is, our Rick is unique. And is he unique? Or he's extremely rare, because it looks like that Ricks that don't take the deal to join the multiverse are exterminated.
Yeah.
Or their families are murdered in such a way that it forces them to join. But maybe Rick is the one that kind of like refused to submit and is like, well, no, I'm going to take you all down. So like, it could be that Evil Morty genuinely doesn't have any experience with a Rick that wanted to stay with his family and had this thrust, had his Rickness thrust upon him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other canon thing I want to tease about is like, I think the one remaining thing to know now is there anything special about this Smith family? Did Rick just randomly crash into a Smith house, or did he select one that's like, you know, was there some kind of care? Like, I think that that's something that I'm interested in knowing, because you can make the argument, it's like, well, any fucking Smith family with a Morty and a Summer is what I want to crash into. Or is there something special about this one? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know how long Rick spends chasing. What are we even going to call this guy? The guy, the Rick that killed his wife. Are we going to give him a name?
Yeah, the Omega Rick. You know, if he's the Alpha Rick, and this other guy's the he's the least Rickest Rick, or the shittiest Rick.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, is it possible he crashes into the same garage? We don't know if Beth is killed in that explosion. Like, I would assume. Probably
it looked like it. Yeah,
she's standing the same distance away as her mother, but
yeah, it, yeah.
And if I was wondering if he survived, might be crashing into the same garage. Like, literally, he disappeared, you know, off to hunt whoever. He came back and sat in the garage drinking for a long time, shooting Ricks as they come through. But then, like, how long did he do that? Did he do that for 5 years? Did he do that for 30 years?
Good question.
If he comes back to the same garage at some point, is it a shock to maybe a Beth who survived that explosion?
That's an interesting question, because I thought that would be, if they ever do it that way, I think it'd be something like a bombshell kind of, but
it probably would be.
I'm trying to think that I feel like they just did that a little bit with Bird Person, like the shocking, the person that was supposed to be dead and they survived. Like, wouldn't it feel a little bit of a retread if the Council of Ricks has got the Beth Prime somewhere stashed away in cryo, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know. I can see him doing it, but it seems a lot enough like the Bird Person thing that, yeah. And what would that, I guess, yeah, you've already got Space Beth, regular Beth. You don't know which is the android and which, and now you've got Beth Prime like that.
And I don't mean, know
it's
if they
not,
need
it's
it.
Not uninteresting, so.
Yeah, but I don't know that it's any more interesting and that they actually need it, because this episode just kicks open the door to so many other possibilities, right? Escaping the central finite curve. I don't know how that can come back, but certainly, like, you've got a character who can traverse that barrier. Yeah. So, and a character who might be wanting to seek revenge later. Who knows?
It's interesting because, like, we talked a lot about the Loki in the Loki, our coverage of Loki, that Michael Waldron, the showrunner of that series, that was one of the head writers of Rick and Morty for the last few seasons. Like, this Loki, the Marvel's going into the multiverse in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously heavily influenced by his time on Rick and Morty. But I also couldn't help but notice or feel, and this is where, you know, maybe we can talk about the gap, but like, it felt like this episode is heavily influenced by last season of Loki. Like, the idea that you've got this infinite curve that has been artificially constricted down to a single, like a narrow band for the good of the universe and to preserve peace amongst these powerful narcissistic beings. I just wonder, like, the conspiracy theory, it's, makes me wonder, like, well, did they take an extra 4 or 5 weeks because they significantly rewrote the finale after seeing getting advanced copies of Loki or whatever? But that can't have happened, right?
I seriously doubt it. You said something to me off air earlier about this theory that you should probably go into now.
Okay, so I was looking into the public statements about the Rick and Morty writing team, and Harmon said recently that they just finished writing season six some time ago, and the animators are halfway done animating it, and that they are a good way into writing season seven right now. Okay. So that makes me think that there's no way that theory can be true. Maybe that's a conversation we can have, is like, if that's not true, then why the hell would, you know, Adult Swim, Comedy Central, why would they push back their season for 4 weeks?
Well, if that's not true, why would you say it? Like, you've already got problems hitting the deadlines you've got. Saying season six is in the bag and then having to wait a year and a half or 2.5 years for it is going to piss people off.
Yeah, no, I guess I meant, like, if that's true, why is Adult Swim, why did Adult Swim push it back for, you know, till now? Like, why?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with Adult Swim's other shows and what they might have in the slate here, and what they, you know, because people have done crazier things for worse reasons, right? I remember when Fox just totally fucked Firefly, released episodes out of order. Like, can you imagine if they released episode 10 of this season before episode 5? Like,
right.
Or it was episode 5, it would make no sense. And then here we get episode 9 as the finale. Mm-hmm. That Yeah, so I've seen worse things happen to shows. That said, it was probably just an internal thing.
Yeah, I wonder, because, like, it looks like the Rick and Morty, from a popularity standpoint, peaked around season 4 at, like, you know, 2.5 million people watching it weekly, and then dwindled by the end of season 4 to 1.3 million, which is exactly where it came back at season 5, but dropped to, like, a 0.8 share.
Oof.
And I wonder if Comedy Central saw that and saw that, like, you know, the big complaints as well, there's no canon, or blah, blah, blah. And they're like, you know what? We need to generate a lot more. We need to market this fucking show. Well, we haven't had to market it for a while. It's been marketing stuff. So we need to market this show. Shut it down. Put it out on Labor Day. Let's get Christopher Lloyd in here to do some live action Doc and Marty spots and get the internet. Because that shit all came out coordinated.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if they're like, hey, we've got these two episodes that are big canon episodes. They're going to flip people's lids. Let's try to bring back the 1.5, 2 million people to give it another shot, because, you know, a lot of people have, you know, Rick and Morty. I still think it's good, you know, and the ratings, not like the, but the critical ratings, I think, you know, they still haven't dropped from the mid 90s, you know, Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic, stuff like that. So, like, it's still a good show. It's just, you know, it's no longer new. It's not blowing people away because, you know, it's won Emmys. It's been recognized. It's a known quantity. So it's harder and harder to blow people's minds. This is one of those. And they're like, hey, fuck it. Let's just shelve it and try to build a big campaign around it. If so, maybe it works, because the word of mouth out of this episode has been pretty incredible. Like, universally hailed as, like, this is good Rick and Morty, even if you've been dissatisfied with the season. So,
and that's the thing about this season. I feel like it's the first season that has been the people have actively disliked at least one episode. Like, I didn't dislike all the same episodes as, you know, the general fandom did, but there was at least one that I actively disliked. I just couldn't stand that episode. That Voltron episode, I did not think it was funny at all. Right. And I think that has been true, not of the same episode, but of an episode at least of this entire season. Now, I don't know why people would write off an entire show because an episode is bad. But it seems like there's a certain portion of the fandom that just will. And maybe they just don't like more episodes. You know, if you dislike three episodes in a row or something. Yeah, maybe you jump off that train.
Yeah, I don't know how, because, like, this is like a bit of a bandwagon show where it's like it did spread by word of mouth, and you got to see this bro kind of phenomenon. And then people, like, usually when I see people discussing Rick and Morty in the broader culture, it used to be like an inside joke thing. Now it's a very, like, oh, fucking Rick and Morty, their fans are so toxic, which I find fucking really annoying. Most of the big places to discuss Rick and Morty nowadays are not. Like, they've kind of, like, much like some properties like Warhammer that deal with problematic protagonists and stuff. Like, you have at some point you got like, hey, do we want to cater to the fans that like unironically think space fascism is good? Or do we want to have the people that are like laughing and memeifying and making fun of it? Do we want the Rick and Morty fans that think Rick is a hero and hate women and et cetera? Or do we want to cater to the people that like understand or and want to learn from? And I think most of the places have, you know, the big public places, the subreddits and the wikis and things like that have made the decision. So like, I feel like that's a tired complaint that the Rick, like, you know, we're quite a ways away from a bunch of nerds throwing fits at McDonald's for the Szechuan sauce, right? Yeah. Like, I think we can stop like beating that hobby horse, but you know, that's going to be the perception for a long time to come. I just don't know. I'm perplexed as to why the show went from 3 million share to 3.0 to a 0.8, because it hasn't had a 80% or 75% decline in quality, at least from my perspective.
Sure. Yeah, I'm with you.
It also could just be like, you know, people are watching this in a lot different ways, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a million different ways to watch it through, like, apps and Adult Swim website and, yes, piracy, things like that. I don't know.
But could it be that the pendulum is attempting to swing back the other way with Rick's health, mental health? Because like early on in this series, I remember people talking about, oh, the show is so fucking dark. The show is so messed up. The show is, you know, it had this feeling of like, every time Rick did something, it was nihilistic. It was borderline evil and completely fucked. And I think a lot of people kind of got off on that, just seeing how far down the hole he can go there. And he's starting to come back up, dig himself back out of that hole, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's necessarily going to change the tone of the show. And they've tried to keep it similar. And I don't think Rick has changed much, but he's definitely on an upward trajectory. I wonder if that's turning some people who really dug what the first season was doing off.
It could be. I also think that like this is also just at its core a gross out transgressive show. And I think a lot of people, as it's gotten more so and gone from like, oh, exploding hobos at Christmas time to giant incest babies and slut dragons, like that radical, I mean, you know, like it's like, Harmontown's all fun and well and good until Dan starts talking about masturbating with a mannequin leg. Sure. You know, like sometimes it gets a little too real for people, like, oh, that's not funny or insightful. That's just fucking weird, dude. And that, I don't know if like Rick and Morty is getting to that point where like Rob Schraub and Justin and Dan's is like, you know, like, fuck it. Like, maybe it's time to, maybe we've got too many people on the bandwagon. It's time for them to remember who the fuck they're dealing with. You know,
I don't know.
Like
that stuff doesn't turn me off, either. But some people, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we probably could have had a larger audience if we'd over the years, we'd have pitched more down the center of the plate rather than throwing some curveballs. But at some point, you're like, fuck it. You know, how many people do you really need to listen to a podcast?
You saying fuck it, it turned off like probably 10% of our audience just a year ago. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Can we talk? OK, so before we talk about more of the, do we want to, I guess we should stay with the insane implications of this. I don't know. We might have gone our way to covering it all.
Well, Rick, I have one more possible scenario here. I'm a little worried that, you know, someone that seems facetiously labeled Evil Morty has the potential to turn evil in the place where he's gone, because he's gone to a place where Rick is not the most intelligent being in the universe. And every single version of Rick that exists in this place is not the most intelligent being in the universe. There's a potential, I think, for quote unquote Evil Morty to try and take out some of his anger, some of his resentment against Rick on these inferior, quote unquote, inferior Ricks. So the potential for him to turn evil, even if all he wanted was to escape Rick in the first place, is definitely there.
I mean, that'd be a great commentary into perpetuation of abuse and the cycle of it. The fact that, like, you know, most abused people, well, I wouldn't say most, a lot of people that are abused have a high risk of turning into abusers themselves because it's all they know. You know, you think it'd make it'd make you sick at your stomach, but, like, you know, it can turn you into a fucking narcissist or some of the borderline personality disorder, and it just kind of fucked.
Nihilist, let's say. I mean, look at the shit that Morty had to do to escape this central finite curve. Look at the carnage. Look at the number of Mortys that were murdered, manufactured and murdered under his rule, his system here, all to get him, like, outside of it.
The fucking Matrix analogy of it, you know, this is a combination Morpheus and Architect scene is hard to deny, because just like Morpheus and Neo were perhaps content to separate 100, you know, like, you know, kill an infinite number of humans connected to the Matrix because they're not really human. They're not really, like, you know, they are, they're the same minds are trying to free, but they're still in prison. They can turn into agents. They can betray you. They can do all these things. You can see that Morty feels that way. And it did, but it is wild because the carnage is cosmic in scope. Like it like breaks Morty at some point. And I thought, like, the, you know, where it's actually very funny too, because Morty knows, like, okay, how do I get all the Ricks to do the wrong thing? I know, I'll tell them. It's kind of like Scary Terry. You can run, but you can't hide. Like, everyone stay where you are and don't leave.
Oh,
which
right.
is going to make all the Ricks be like, fuck it, we got to get out of here. And then so they're all getting destroyed by their portal guns. And then the smart Ricks are like, hey, I got the way out. It's Project Phoenix, which they've established. But then he's rerouted them all to this blender thing and turning all this tainted portal fluid and their blood and gore and focusing into literally like a laser of rage that he's breaking the universe with. It's pretty fucking epic.
It's telling that in an episode or a season rather that they showed us literal hell with Hellraisers and Cenobites and Pinheads. This is probably the most fucked up thing I've seen this season.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is. Yeah, when they all start getting rerouted to the pods that have the basomatics in the bottom.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, as Morty sees all this gore pumping through the system, he's just like, Jesus Christ, it's insane.
Yeah, it is.
But, I mean, they've also... So we also talk about, you know, there's, again, this is a meta a thing where, you know, Morty is like, hey... We don't want to go, like, this whole thing has been about, like, do we just go back to the way things are or do we do something different? Mm-hmm. And they keep pushing to the and Rick finally relents, is like, fine. Do you want to jump the shark and see my whole stupid crybaby backstory? Here you go. And he's got all these memories harvested from evil memory and he lets Morty into it. There's a couple questions there. I think this is no more wiggle room. This is canon.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you can be like, well, it's a different version or a different dimension or he was lying to the Federation guy. And it's also someone's going to, like, I would like to know what the difference was between the real memory and the fake memory that allowed him to break out of the hologram in season 3 mm-hmm. or the hollow, the virtual mind wipe prison or whatever the hell Nathan Fillion had him in. I wonder if it's something like the garage door is a different color or the house roof line was a slightly different peak, because, like, it went down exactly the way he said it did, essentially.
Yeah. Seems like it.
Yeah. But, like, I don't think there's any wiggle room. We talked about this before about, like, well, they could do it. If they, like, say this is a different dimension or this is true from a certain point of view or this was all a dream, it really will jump the shark.
Mm hmm.
And I watched the after the episodes or the inside the episode and all the producers kind of, like, from Dan Harmon down, kind of acknowledged that, like, this one of the reasons we waited for so long to comment on this is because we really wanted to go back and look at all the Evil Morty episodes and, like, all of the things we've left dangled to make sure all of the things are connected and all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed.
Yeah.
I think they're committing that this is real deal. This is not no fooling.
And they did a great job with that. They did a better job than I'm sure I even understand with that. Because I have questions. I even with the stuff they showed me that I think I should understand, I don't quite understand it. But also, I know there are a lot of references in here that they're making that I don't remember the exact moments that they're talking about very well. The probably the biggest question I have is when it comes to Rick creating the Citadel. So they show this all in his, you know, mind blowers flashback thing here.
Right.
I don't understand. So Rogue Ricks used Mortys to hide themselves from the Citadel. That's established. We remember that episode. They bring it up here. But then they make this logical leap where they say, and it worked so well that the Citadel became its own Morty market. I don't understand. Can you explain to me what the connection is there? Why did they turn it into a Morty market? They're not, the Citadel's not trying to hide from the Citadel. Are they supplying Rick?
Yeah, I think they're supplying, they're like an arms dealer to supplying everybody. Or the fact that, like, once it became known to Rogue Ricks that you could shield yourself with Morty misery, that the like, used to, you just, you know, it's one Rick, one Morty. But if you're trying to amass an army for some reason, then you got to make more. And this is like, it's kind of like there's a lot of yada yada the Matrix between like, oh, you know, we scorched our skies and then they had fusion. And but then also they had to turn us into copper tops. There's not a lot of like, you know, from A to B to C there. It's just kind of like, I think there was a little bit of yada yadaing through. Well, Mortys became a commodity at some point, and once they were commodified, then they all kind of like got reduced to, instead of an infinite variety of Mortys, it's just this one particular perfected, idealized, subservient thing. Because, like, here's a question I've got. Genetic engineered Mortys, fine. Extra dimensional Mortys, fine. I don't see how these Ricks are literally have to be going back in time to be forcing the union of Jerry's and Beth's, because there's a whole sequence of them kind of rigging the romance before they go in and perfect it and just start cloning and flash wiping Mortys, you know, like how would they do that?
Let me offer a potential explanation. Is, I mean, in an infinite number of universes, which is contained in the central finite curve, would there not be an infinite number where Jerry and Beth are not born? Like Jerry and Beth don't get together until later in the timeline.
Yeah. I guess so. Or don't get together at all, because there's like things like, you know, even with a universe of infinite Beths and Jerrys and Mortys and Summers, like the Ricks are too lazy to go search. Like, why would they when they can just make it happen through the sheer force of their will or through their scientific brilliance?
I think that's the explanation. Is it's not time travel. It's simply Jerry and Beth didn't get together until later in this timeline.
I gotcha. Okay. Or maybe there's like, it was sloppier control, because like at some of the points I noticed there was a version of Morty who was a little girl. Exact same, like Summer was the same, but Morty was like a girl with pigtails and was wearing a little dress, like a Jessica or like a Lisa Simpson, Jessica Simpson. Completely different type of dress there. A Lisa Simpson type dress. Uh-huh. And I was wondering if they're trying to hint at, like, you know, there is a certain type of Morty that is the Mortiest Morty in the eyes of Rick, which is the most subservient, most forgiving. Mm. That's a great line, too, like that we're infinitely tied to this man because of his narcissism and self-absorption and our forgiveness. You know, like this is the chain that keeps the thing together. But yeah, I don't know, because like the thing that the only fly in all this ointment of Rick's kind of redemption is the fact that he Cronenberged his whole family with the exception of Morty and didn't really give a shit.
Yeah.
So like, does he actually care about Beth? Is it only really Morty that he cares about? Or was Rick just in a much more nihilist position? Like he's done personal growth and because none of, I mean, the one thing I'm convinced is neither, none, this family is not his original family at all.
No, I don't, it's just, think he
I don't know whether he, I don't know whether he handpicked them, or whether he just went the first one that had a Morty that, you know, and a Beth and all that stuff. But like, at some point, but that's the thing is like, I don't know if it makes sense even in context with his, like, you know, when Rick says, hey, yes, this is all random and nothing's important, but some things I just decide are important. Mm-hmm. And like, it's weird that he would decide that about Birdman, but not about his own daughter. Like, okay, well, yeah, these are all random, but you're the one I've chosen to live with and try to make it with. So, like, I'm not going to just abandon you every time I Cronenberg the world, especially since that family is still alive and recognizably human and not Cronenberg. That's like a weird, I feel like, plot hole, but surely the writing room is aware of that kind of being weird, and I wonder if they'll decide to address it.
We'll see, man. Like I said, the possibilities are kind of endless. We've got the Golden Portal now, which I don't think has like any real significance. The only thing I can tell about the Golden Portal is that maybe it delineates the central finite curve from outside of it, from everything else.
Yes. Yeah, like that's what the portal looks like when it's outside the curve. Yeah,
right. Either that, or they want us to like, or that's just a result of the technology mixing the Morty blood with the portal fluid, just mm-hmm. turns it yellow, right? Either way, mm-hmm. I think what it's going to signify is this quote unquote evil Morty. But the other thing is they kind of strand, I guess, Rick and Morty in Mortyburg. They separate the saucer section and they're now in Mortyburg or whatever, because the portal gun's out of juice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, out of portal fluid. And they showed all the juice. Can Rick not make portal fluid? Like, it seemed like you have to go to the Citadel to get more, but I don't know if that tracks. Rick can make more portal fluid, though, if he has to do it from scratch.
I don't think the Rickest Rick would give the Citadel any influence over his movement, right? And
yeah.
If they were the only source of portal fluid in the entire universe, that wouldn't track with the Rick I know. So
I mean, maybe he picks it up because they make it in bulk and it's just easier than making it himself. Because it does seem like the portal gun technology is a real bitch to invent. Like, it
then
took
why show
a long
that it's
time
empty?
For Rick to invent it.
Like, that's my question. Why show if it's empty if they're not going to actually say, hey, this is a problem for these?
Well, it is weird, too, because, like, we've been speculating all year about, like, oh, the no portal gun. And now, like, I think canonically there's no portal gun. I think it's forever, but it might be kind of like in the Spider-Man comics, you know, Peter Parker has technological web spinners. They're a device that he's built because he's a genius. And almost 99% of the time, you never think about him having web fluid and carrying spares and changing. But once in a while, in a real bitch of a battle, or because he hasn't had time to go home, the plot is he's out of web fluid. And what does he do without it? I wonder if there's going to be a little mini arc in next season where Rick, he's got like the city of orphaned Mortys and no portal juice. And he has to go around like reinventing portal juice for the first time or rebuilding it from scratch or something.
There could be a real sort of comeuppance in that scenario, right?
Yeah.
Like if he has to admit some of his flaws.
It's amazing how well some of this stuff works, like how operatic it is. Like, it was a genuine moment where, like, Morty left and they ramped up the epic version of the evil Morty.
Hell
song
yeah.
And he's like shooting the gap, and it's like, because we just watched 2001 last week and he's 2001-ing you know, the gate while like Rick and is needing Morty to save the rest of the Mortys. Do you think there's anything interesting in the fact that like there's essentially now an infinity's worth of Mortys that are spare, and are there any Ricks at all? Because the previous Citadel War had to be extremely destructive to Ricks. Well, I guess not, because you always have an infinite supply of these fuckers.
Yeah, that's
unless
the thing.
But did he destroy the central finite curve, which is essentially all of the Ricks? Because you saw those, like, that chain of infinity, which I think represented the... And when Morty got to the other side, they all burst. So, like, I feel like all the Mortys are free now. And what the hell does that mean?
I don't know. I feel like that was just signifying that he's outside of the central finite curve, right? That in
oh,
the
so
place
it wasn't
he's
literally
at.
All of the Ricks being destroyed. It was just the Ricks at the Citadel.
Yeah, I don't think so, because the central finite curve still includes our Rick and Morty.
Okay. So if you kill an infinity of Ricks in the central finite curve, you still have an infinity of Ricks left.
Yes. That's so, the problem.
But will they get like dumber and dumber? Because like, you know, like simple Rick, they imply that he's dumber than the other Ricks, but he's still the smartest man in his universe.
Yes.
So are we going to get some real fucking lowest common denominator Ricks now?
Is there a Cronenberg Rick at this point? Didn't he?
I don't know.
Would he have Cronenberged himself in that universe?
Well, he went to that universe because he was Cronenberged, and he went to that one because like the other one had, you know, he turned his world into an Earth or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting if next year that, like, if Simple Rick is now the new baseline smartest Rick and, like, everyone else is dumber than him. You got some real fucking Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal, like, level Ricks, but they're still the smartest. What does that even look like? It's kind of like what they did a riff on where, like, copies of the copy of the copy, they're, like, building, you know, the professor from Gilligan's Island version of clones where they're made out of coconut husks and shit. Like, what is a Cro-Magnon version of Rick? What's his technology look like, you know?
It could cast into pretty stark relief some of the patterns that Rick's been in, right? Like, if you see a super intelligent Rick examining the actions of far less intelligent Ricks, but they're doing the same thing he would do, they're just like maybe not as cool about it.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, you could really hammer that point home.
I also think it's an interesting concept that, like, Rick's the smartest man in his universe. But does that exempt guys like Stephen Colbert? Because he is in an artificial universe that Rick himself created. Mm-hmm. Is that exempt, like, inside? Is that, that's inside? So, like, it's, is it possible that these pocket universes could create a being more intelligent or as intelligent as Rick?
Oh, boy. Is his creation going to get away from him?
I really want to see the return of that guy. You know, like that. That was one of other than Evil Morty. We talked about this in the beginning, but just how fucking next level Bond villain they've turned this Rick and this Morty into, and how he's recognizably a Morty with the cheese, and but he's just, I don't know, there's something about him, and they lampshade it where he's like, Rick, you know, he shoots him. He's like, why did you shoot me? You knew I was shielded. He's like, I was just disagreeing with what you're saying. He's like, yeah, the time for good dialogue is over. Now it's the time for me to do the thing I likey with the finite curve thingy. Like, he's had this amazing Bond level dialogue, and they just fucking stop in that scene. It's pretty great.
It was. That was a good gag. You know what I'm not sure is a good gag, because I honestly don't know, the Samurai Jack stuff, which is obviously what the title is based on here, and the intro I think is based on. I've never seen Samurai Jack. How good of a play on Samurai Jack is the intro to this thing?
It's not really. Like, I feel like it's loosely connected in that, like, they're like, so Samurai Jack is actually an American anime by that Gennady Tartakovsky guy who did the Clone Wars. He did that. It's a primal that I really liked a couple of years ago about the, speaking of Cro-Magnon man that teams up with the T-Rex to get to get revenge. He's got this, like, very distinctive kind of, like, squared off fingers, and everything's angular, very fluid and simple and impressionistic, almost characterized like a caricature of the characters. This is more of like Sam, you know, this is more of like a Sailor Moon kind of, like, trash level, like that kind of anime, like bubblegum anime, which I enjoy, because I've me and Cecily been watching Sailor Moon Silver Crystal Chronicles or whatever the newest version is, and Beastars and shit like that lately, that is this kind of, like, the the intro was just chef's kiss. I loved it a lot. It was pretty good.
Rick, I did love that they replaced the usual Rick and Morty intro with one that had the Rick and Morty song, right? It's just like a weird version of it.
Yep. But there's something, I don't know, there's something about the Evil Morty dialogue. I just loved it, how that you felt like you were like he was one step ahead of Rick. And there's also, like, is it this show? What show have we been talking about the Marvel's use of the editorial's notes? We'll have, like, a yellow box with, like, see issue 533 of the Amazing Spider-Man editor. That they had, like, a Rick Stan Lee pop up and be like, Excelsior, true believers, see Rick and Morty episodes. I thought that stuff was so fucking cool.
That might have been coverage.
It might have been. I don't think they need it in this show, but it was a nice little nod to, like, I don't know, like the comic book kind of sprawling narrative version of it. Because that's another, comic books is another excellent model for Rick and Morty, where it's like, not every issue of the comic book is an installment of a larger arc. In fact, they're all kind of like mini arcs, and every once in a while you'll get something that, like, will introduce a new character or change a relationship, or someone will get married or someone will get paralyzed or some shit like that. But mostly it's just random weekly adventures. And I know that's something that like Dan particularly kind of yearns for. He's like tired of all the slavishly serialized shit that we're going through right now. But yeah, the whole like, yeah, you're all caught up. Speaking of that scene, I have no idea what power or ability Rick manifested when he brought Big Boy out, which looked like a some kind of stitched together Cronenberg version of himself.
And how it's a metaphor for capitalism?
I don't know.
Is this bullshit? Like, is it just
Rick
saying a thing that is not true?
I don't know, because it's weird, because like the behind the scene episode, they're all talking about that this was a commentary about essentially Zoomers and millennials going into the whirring wood chipper that is late stage capitalism, if you subscribe to that worldview.
And then the fucking billionaire of evil Morty blasting off into space on a rocket ship built by the misery of millions of Mortys.
Yeah. That his like individual liberation doesn't mean jack shit against all of the unified misery. And that like hinting towards a future that where like if older generations and younger generations can work together rather than opposing, which is kind of how this stuff is framed, you know, like, oh, the boomers got theirs and they got this fuck it, got mine mentality. Like if you can just get them to care and work together, you could solve something. I don't know. I thought that was. I didn't see like that until they started talking about it, I didn't see the politics behind it, to be honest. I thought the other episode where they had the, you know, Morty Town adventures of the cop and the rise of evil Morty president. I thought that stuff was
Tales
more
from the Citadel.
Yeah, that was a much more on the surface, a commentary about civilization, where this just felt like a really good Professor Moriarty, you know, Spectre James Bond kind of like ultimate reveal betrayal thing. But as far as like what that fucking mutant thing was, it was getting gold energy as Rick was, and then he saved it all up. And I don't know. It was fucking weird.
Yeah. It felt a little bit like the Hellraiser thing that they did where, you know, he turns pain from pleasure back into pain.
Yeah.
And then stores it and then shoots it at people. Yeah. They're Morty Chuds, which I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know. There was definitely part of that capitalism stuff with the underclass. But they're living underground and they definitely are like chuds, right? But not horses.
Yeah, I called them Morty Locks for like the Morlocks and Eloy from the Time Travelers. But like this exploited class that, you know, President Morty needed to blast off and to escape the system.
And just a couple of other random things. The music in this show is always very good. And, you know, this rendition here they do on the Evil Morty theme at the end is absolutely great. I also really love the flashback to Rick's past music. There's like a very Stranger Things, Tron, Blade Runner feel to the whole thing.
Was that Chaos again? I felt like...
Maybe.
I thought I recognized them, but I was going to look it up and I forgot.
If so, I need to just like buy one of their albums and check it out, because yeah, that stuff is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then we didn't talk about Mr. Poopy Butthole, which is another interesting bit of this episode.
Mr. Poopy Butthole, that was quite the... You know, I've seen like Rick and Morty challenge their audience before, like, you know, when the Mr. Poopy Butthole's come on, is like, hey, you know, maybe you should go to college and finish your degree or do something besides wait around for the next. But this, I don't know, it's something that probably everyone needs to hear. And the trick is implementing it. Like all the stuff that he says is just so fucking right on and amazing. And I think the distillation of the things that like Dan Harmon and the people who worked on Harmontown have kind of gone through in therapy, that, you know, the reason things sometimes go good in relationships at the beginning is because you are being, you know, you're in tune, you know, you're going through things together. And then like there's maybe a certain point where you're drinking too much or you're having problems at work and you don't want the other person to know about it because they think you're perfect. And that line about, you know, we just dig our, you know, Have you ever thought about how horrified the people around us would be if they really knew who we truly were? So we just dig ourselves deeper into our lives every day, hurting the only people brave enough to love us. I wish I was brave enough to love them back. We don't have as much time as you think. Ooh-wee. Yeah. Jesus Christ, Mr. Poopy Butthole.
No, it's not. It's not funny. It's definitely not funny. I was looking at this post-credit stinger thinking, okay, the voice is funny, but nothing he's saying is funny at all. This is some real shit.
It's true. I feel like that everyone has probably felt like this at some time if you're over the age of, like, I don't know, 15.
Yeah.
It's a universal human experience, which should tell you, like, it's weird. It's like, if it's a universal human experience, it shouldn't have the power that it does, because the power is you're alone. You alone are bad and wretched, and everyone else has got their shit together and doing the right thing all the time, and it's just you fucking up.
I feel like this is where the millennials are starting to figure shit out, right? Like, they're starting to realize that, oh no, it's not just me feeling down in the dumps right now. I'm not the one who's had a bad streak of luck and is responding poorly to it. It's fucking everybody.
Yeah.
Like, millennials, Gen Z, everybody is like, the younger people are starting to realize this, and I feel like that's going to be healthier, a lot healthier long term.
Yeah, I feel like that sometimes we're in a race between long term, like this enlightenment that you're talking about, like these younger people figuring it out and like getting therapy, and like a return of reactionary, like this shit's making a soy boy weak. Mama, it's like, you know,
that feels like the last gasp of a dying ideology to me.
I hope.
I hope. That's my hope.
I hope, but gee whiz. Ooh-wee, as Mr. Poopy Boho would say. It's an awful lot out there right now.
Yeah, I'm feeling particularly optimistic today. Other days, I'd probably say, this enlightenment shit is about to hit a fan.
Yeah. I hope so. But I guess the one thing we didn't really talk about is Rick and Two Crows. Like, there's this whole like 5 minute segment of this thing that like is completely superseded, that would probably be a popular meme in its own right. Like, you got Crow Horse, like, hey, I've given you free will, and it goes off, submit to Crow Horse. Mm-hmm. I thought that stuff was good. He's an anti-hero, run. He's only one man, but with the power of 1,000 crows, like all that stuff is a little bit of commentary also on some of the like the boys and invincible shit that people have been getting up to, the deconstruction. It's just, you know, like, seems like right now the thing to do if you're deconstructing is to try to one up people with impressive shows of pointless, senseless violence. And Rick and Morty have kind of like been a trailblazer to that. Like, you wonder if The Boys gets made, if this, you know, kind of the gonzo success of the gore and all that stuff on Rick and Morty hadn't hit with people. But them exploring that, I thought, was really funny. So a 40-year-old Rick and Morty shows up, orders a rum and coke, and the bartender essentially says he's a 20-year-old poser. This is among my drinks of choice, and once again, I feel attacked by this show. What? Rum and coke? Like, what? That's like a lightweight drink now? What the?
It's not a refined drink, I think, is what they're saying.
I get it, Harmon. Like, you drink ice and straight up vodka. That's because you just need to go right to work. But like, I'm sorry. Well, I need a little splash of coke in there.
What is the flavor of a rum and coke? It's just sweet, right? It's like drinking Mountain Dew. The only flavor you're ingesting is sweet. And if that's what you're in it for, that seems like a pretty unrefined palate. But
Damn, I also get it for my co-host too. Jesus.
I was going to say, I also just like a good Jack and Coke, which is just the palate of sweet. So
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, I am a 40-year-old in my 40s. So like, maybe they're just taking well-aimed shots and I don't like it, but
which means you've already sold out and given up. You're no longer 26.
Yeah, for sure. I also thought it was interesting that truthful element that like Rick wasn't back because he missed Morty. He was back because the crows dumped him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting in context of like, how many times has Rick been the one that someone has stepped out on and is having an affair, and that That's like, it doesn't seem like it's new, or that seems like it's new experiences for him. And I thought that's like that set up perfectly that moment later in the episode. Cause like, you know, and then Rick comes home and his mom's like, you know, things should be different now and he should take you seriously and all that stuff. And Morty's just like, Nope. I'm desperate. I'll do whatever it takes to get him back and get him to stay. Which kind of shows some development from Beth, because that's how Beth reacted towards Rick 3 seasons ago.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting because, like, I don't think that they can come back next year and just pull the same shit they've been pulling, right? Yeah. Like, they have to, there has to be, and again, we talked about this, like, there's peaks and valleys to self-improvement and recovery and personal growth. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that Rick is going to be a perfect individual, but, like, they have to acknowledge that this season happened. And the only thing I get, I think, is different is that, like, Morty has got more empathy to Rick and more insight into his condition. But I don't think Rick really has any insight into Morty. Like, the whole thing with the crows was him considering their things from their point of view. That's how he was learned empathy. Whereas he refuses to do that for his child or his grandchildren. So I guess Morty might be more sympathetic and empathetic, but that was never Morty's problem. So maybe, I don't know. Maybe Rick will be as bad as he ever was next season.
Well, I think probably being trapped inside a spaceship that is a flying city of Morty's might help push Rick in the direction of empathizing with Morty a bit.
Oof, I don't know, because these
or you could just Morty-ism. Get pissed off.
Yeah, I also wonder, because this is another long thing that we've been considering, like, what does it mean to be a Mortius Morty, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they'll say anything about that. Like,
I feel like
Morty can't be the Mortiest of Morty. It's got to be our Morty, right?
Yeah.
What does that look like? Oh, one other question I had. Whereas Summer was, she only had like one appearance these last 2 episodes, which is interesting since they've really upped her importance. She was completely left out of like the core relationship and canon episodes in a way that she hasn't. Like, she was right there with Morty in the escape from the Citadel and or the escape from the Federation and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What was her deal about voting? Like, she said, can he still be 40 because I want him to be able to get me my friends Molly or whatever it was. And they looked at her and she goes, I don't care. I don't care about not voting. I'd rather throw away
my vote than support a broken system or something like that.
What does it have to do with the Molly?
I don't think it has anything to do with the Molly specifically. I think it's like dissenting from what her parents are wanting in that moment. I
thought it was she's saying something political. I didn't know that she was 18 and could or is it like something about a felony quantity of Molly? But yeah, I didn't get that. I didn't get that at all.
Yeah,
that's the one thing that this I was confused. So
sometimes they make a little bit of a leap in their fast and furious joke telling.
I guess you got to sometimes when you're got a show with this many multiverses. You know, I think we should see what the fans have to say in the mailbag.
Yeah.
But first, let's take a quick break. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, we're back. Rick and Morty at baldmove.com is how to get feedback. I doubt that we have another episode.
No.
Unless something just truly crazy were to happen, like a stealth 11th episode.
Like a live action episode that everybody is like a live.
Yeah, if they did. I think that was just a marketing attempt. Probably that's what they threw together in the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, hey, can we get this guy to. Can we get Doc, the actual Doc, and someone that looks kind of like a Marty? And but yeah, and unless the, like a 15-minute short comes out like that, I don't imagine we'll come back. But Rick and Morty at baldmove.com is how you get into our feedback. And a couple fans took us up on it in the last few weeks. Let's see what they're having to say. Alvin says, I love you guys, and thanks for giving me a Rick and Morty outlet without having to join a fan group. They're a bit much for me. See, even on this podcast, the slander against the Rick and Morty fan base continues unabated.
Got a rep.
But anyway, do you think that Rick and Morty is just a manifestation of Harmon and or Roiland's own journey? The family's been to therapy, and for me, it really clicked on pro-Mortius that therapy is working. He's trying to be a better man after therapy. Do you think that's how this is playing out?
Oh,
I kept on thinking this as I was watching this episode, like, man, we should, you know, we've had a couple sponsors. One of them is BetterHelp online therapy. I felt like we should have done a better job of tying this in because like this is the one show that's like not about therapy. In fact, it's about this, you know, like even skeptics dealing with it. But yeah, I guess if any of that, that Morty, that the poopy butthole shit connected, maybe betterhelp.com/pickle.
No, you're 100% right. It is almost certainly a good chunk of definitely Dan. I don't know much about Justin, but definitely Dan's journey.
I feel it. Yeah. 100%. Like this is essentially a Harmontown from 3 or 4 years ago. A lot of the stuff was probably things that Dan, you know, cause he started getting therapy in the waning stages of his relationship with his wife. And in their divorce, and it kept, you know, it's kept that individual and couples counseling with his new relationship. It seems like it's going a lot better for him. But like, yeah, I think these are things like, you know, we still love each other, but we're too toxic. We got to split ways. Like, I'm not healed enough to be in a relationship, but I'm healthy enough to know that this is not a good one to be in. I'm going to go do the Two Crows thing. Like, a lot of that stuff, a lot of the stuff the evil Morty says, I think, are probably things that, you know, he's been told in the clinical. Because, like, you know, like when he's talking about genius, like, broadly speaking, I think that's all Dan talking about himself. Mm-hmm. Which sounds fucking narcissistic as hell, but like mm-hmm. people have called him a genius ever since, you know, Community days. So he thinks a lot about himself. I don't think he thinks he's the smartest man in the universe, but maybe the smartest man in Hollywood. But
okay.
Yeah. Or at least used to. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating because I wish he kept on doing Harmontown because I felt like he got reasonably healthy. And then it's like, you know what? I'm tired. I'm fucking with my life keeping doing this podcast with these young kids, and I'm gonna move in this Malibu mansion, and how the hell will they relate to me? It's, I better bail now. But
I mean, happy successful people are not funny. We all know that. You can't, you have to be a certain amount of dysfunctional in order to be funny, right?
I wonder.
I'm joking, but also
I know, but a lot of people think that, and I don't know that. I don't know how Harmon feels about that. I think that's something he was worried about. Like, geez, what happens if I get healthy and happy? And then, you know, what material you got to work with? You know, hey, I woke up today with really good self-esteem. Super relatable. Like, yeah, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Alvin continues, we're 5 seasons in as I write this. So what's your Rick and Morty code similar to The Wire? So that's like, you know, which season do you like best?
Yeah,
I'm with you on 5 episodes. 3 through 5 were okay. This season, as I wait for the finale, is pretty good to me. My Rick and Morty code, unless the season 5 finale is just some trash, is 4, 3, 5, 2, 1. Wow,
4 is up there. Wow,
honestly,
1 is the last. Damn.
Yeah, I think, boy,
like, maybe. Ooh, I'm looking through some of the title names here. It might be like 2, 1, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm definitely 2, 1 because I think mm-hmm. 2, it's not that they're funnier, but they build on the things in 1 in very satisfying ways. I kind of feel like 1 through 3 are almost, or 1 through 4. 1 through 3 for sure, and 1 through 4 is about even in quality. I mean, you could say 1 is better than the other. Some has the benefit of having more context and canon than others. And 5 is the first noticeable one. It's like, on average, these aren't as good as the previous season. But I still think we only had 1 or 2 bad episodes, 3 or 4 good ones, 2 or 3 great ones. And then, you know, I think these last 2 episodes have been as good as anything Rick and Morty has ever done.
Yeah. Now, I will say going 2, 1, 3 here is weird because 3 has what's probably my favorite episode, Tales from the Citadel. But overall, I don't know. Maybe it's 2, 3, 1, 4, 5. 2's really good.
It's, yeah, I don't know. Like, but 1 is, one is just the original.
I know. It's got classics like the Meeseeks episode. And
the Meeseeks is like one of my all-time
Cronenberg
favorites.
Episode.
Although, I think we'll get, someone will ask us this. In fact, let's go ahead and get into this. Gianna wanted to know, hey, my roommate Sabrina and I are longtime friends of Rick and Morty, and pickle me this. Well, so you can learn a lot about a person from their all-time favorite episode, the Rick and Morty. So we're wondering, after watching all 5 seasons, what is your number one favorite Rick and Morty episode?
Does Tales from the Citadel probably being my favorite mean that I'm one of those fucking fans who only likes continuity?
Only like continuity. And I guess I might be on the extreme other end because my two favorite, I don't know if I can narrow it down to one, but Interdimensional Cable 2 and the Meeseeks episode.
I knew Meeseeks would be in there. Yeah.
And it's largely on the strength of the Jan Michael Vincent Sector 6. Like, that's like, I fucking love that. I also love the framing device for Interdimensional Cable 2.
Yes.
Jerry's penis hospital adventure is better than the first one. It's got the personal space one. I fucking love the IDC 2. and Meeseeks. Meeseeks was the first. I like the first episode or two, but the Meeseeks one is the one where I'm like, oh, this is fucking brilliant. This show's going places.
Yeah, I think Meeseeks is a good representation of what the show was trying to do in season one. I will say I probably like Anatomy Park the best out of season one. There are a lot of good ones in season one, but I really do love Anatomy Park.
They had something. Alvin also says one more. Go back to Alvin, rather. I forgot there's a other paragraph. One more while he's there. I love Archer as much as Rick and Morty, but when I rewatch, I don't ever go past season five. If Rick and Morty presumably pulls off the full 10 seasons, do you think there'll ever be a point, a cutoff point, where the show becomes so different that what it was that you can't look at it anymore? So I don't know, because Archer had the whole where it literally became a different show. Like, you got tired of writing spy parodies. So it's like they just came up with a device that allowed them to do all these different genres and things. I don't feel like Rick and Morty would ever be similarly limited, because they can just kind of just do whatever the fuck. Every Rick and Morty episode is like a holodeck episode of Star Trek. Anything can happen. But I don't know. Like, I like doing a complete series rewatch of Rick and Morty. On the one hand, I don't know that people would be like, I kind of, the way I do Rick and Morty when I'm feeling like watching Rick and Morty is I just kind of jukebox it. Like, I go on to, you know, my, I think it's Hulu is what I watch this on. Usually I've been watching it on Amazon because we paid for the season, but like, just go and like, oh, what, I want to watch the Meeseeks one, or and click through. Oh, the Show Me What You Got episode. I remember liking that and the songs, and you just kind of like kind of work your way through. Oh yeah, the Citadel episodes. I don't know if anyone watches like a full series, but on the other hand, it's pretty effortless to do so. The episodes are like 20 minutes long. It's pretty snappy. I don't know.
You know, I was trying to think of shows that I might have done this with that they changed and I just can't really go back and watch a certain era of them. X-Files is like that when Mulder left.
Yeah. I'm same way. Like, the season after the movie, X-Files doesn't exist to me past like season 7.
Right. But I'm having a hard time thinking of other shows like that.
I mean, things definitely, like, I think later seasons of Star Trek, The Next Generation, like, you start getting deep into season 6 and 7, there's like noticeably more silly episodes or filler episodes, but there's also some of my favorites. So
yeah.
I mean, that's the nice thing about the episodic stuff is you don't have to watch every fucking thing. You can just watch your favorites and who cares, right?
I think there are shows that you look back on them and you see, oh my God, this show evolved a ton. Like, when I look at very early episodes of Always Sunny, they resemble the modern Always Sunny in basically any way. But it was such a gradual transformation that I didn't really notice. But now going back, I almost would have to skip the early seasons because they're not what I think of as Always Sunny.
Yeah, I noticed that on a rewatch of Parks and Rec, too. Like, the first season of Parks and Rec is kind of borderline unwatchable, and it doesn't really get going until late in season 2, early season 3, where they start, you know, things start really clicking. They're even changing, like, big parts of the cast and stuff. So,
yeah, I wonder if that's just a common, you know, sitcom thing where they find their stride, because Seinfeld has a little bit of a problem with that, too.
Yeah, I also, like, I started watching Curb Your Enthusiasm in reverse order, and I got to where, like, I couldn't go further back than season 7 because it was just, like, so, I felt like it was devolving, you know, it was getting kind of worse and worse, and the, you know, camera quality was bad, because they took off so many years between, like, there's a big gap, it's like, there's, like, this 10-year reverse, it fucking threw me, so I definitely see what you're saying. I don't know if Rick and Morty will be like that. This, I will say that, like, this does feel like a halfway point, you know, like, it's like, maybe it feels like more of like a 2/3 point. I'm interested to see how they keep this interesting for 5 more seasons.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Zach. So we talked about this connection with Loki, and this email explores that in a lot more depth. What a season finale. They did the thing. We thought they were never going to do it, but they did. Take that, Dan Harmon from 3 years ago. I was thinking that Rick and Morty, or as a, that the Rick and Morty veteran who went on to showrun for Loki, talking about Michael Waldron, and the Rick and Morty crew for season 5 must have been talking. Is it just me, or are the parallels between the Loki finale and the Rick and Morty finale too glaring to ignore? We have a Wizard of Oz-esque man behind the curtain reveal of a nearly omniscient character who has been pulling the strings from behind the face of a giant and all-powerful organization that claims to run the world from the shadows. You have Citadel and Evil Morty and the TVA and Kang. You have a misfit duo coming together to focus on the more pressing issue, the collapse of the time stream. An anti-hero making a choice to go rogue at the last minute and tear down the constructs of a perceived artificial order through the multiverse. You have a cliffhanger ending that confirms the final events will redefine how we understand the rules of the cinematic world that it's contained in. Turning expectations on their head by doing the thing when all signs pointed to them never doing it, or at least saving it for a large standalone event, such as a movie or a discussion of a Rick and Morty movie about Evil Morty. I never got that meta discussion.
A like, movie? No.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason why you can't do a Rick and Morty movie. It's just that that seemed like it was just, yeah, it had to be unfounded speculation. Overall themes about overcoming toxic relationship dynamics and personal growth and complicated interpersonal dynamics and how one's choices ripple affect events surrounding them. You know, all the Marvel projects post Endgame have had a lot to do with like trauma, abuse, survivor's guilt, like hell. Endgame had a group therapy scene in it. Captain America, or what is it? Falcon and the Winter Soldier had a individual therapy session, couples therapy session between Bucky and Falcon. And I gotta think that Rick and Morty,
Rick's story,
100%, 100%. Loki, as we already talked about, is I do feel like the Rick and Morty has been very influential, because I don't think that, especially in pop culture type context, I've seen this much talk about personal growth and stuff before, you know. Like the idea of superheroes doing therapy, there's no fucking way. And I, you know, Rick and Morty has to be somewhat responsible for that. You have the mystery introduction and mystery concept for future releases to explore, such as Marvel's multiverse or Evil Morty's yellow teleport gun. I hope there are other people pointing this out, but if not, what did you guys think? Are there any more that I missed? I think you nailed it. And I got, like, as I was watching it, I couldn't help but be reminded about all the talk we had about Michael Waldron taking the writer's Bible from Rick and Morty and just injecting it into the Marvel. And it appears that some of that got cross-pollinated back, or maybe Rick and Morty is just that much ahead of the curve.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, Mike Waldron, you know, was a producer on the show until 2020. So I'm sure there were a lot of conversations. If you know, were to believe that season 6 is already written and they're working on season 7, then there were probably a lot of like overlaps for the airing of season 4 and the writing of season 5. To where he might have participated in some of those discussions, if not outright. I don't think he actually wrote any of them, the episodes, because he'd be credited as a writer, or really produced any of them, because he would be credited. But there was probably a lot of those meta discussions going on at the time when he was still there. So, yeah, totally.
I presume these people are still friends, mm-hmm. and that they talk about their big projects. And but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like there's just a lot of creativity, underrated amount of creativity in the Rick and Morty's writer's room. And the fact that they can generate this much emotion from this stupid, deeply stupid show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can have the like incest babies, and they can have all the garbage goobers and all that stuff, and it doesn't diminish the ability to have a Mr. Poopy Butthole rip out the heart of a generation of people around the world. I think it's kind of incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Rick and Morty season 5. Anything else to say about this, or should we shut the book?
Yeah, I think that's it.
If what they're saying about it's true, I don't know that. I wonder if the plan is with these 10 episode seasons, if they'll try to do 2 a year. Like, can we expect Rick and Morty to maybe come back in the spring, or is it going to be a permanent summer slot?
I do think it would be smart to get more Rick and Morty faster. because I think a lot of what is hurting Rick and Morty's audience and viewership is people just losing interest over the long breaks.
Yeah, and also and the pressure to make it worth the fact that it's been gone for a year and a half or whatever.
Specifically that they come back to a less than stellar episode and they're like, this is not what I waited a year and a half for. I'm done. I can't handle this.
And if they're getting like two seasons ahead in the writing, that's great because it lets them, you know, really. Because like I don't think you need that kind of headroom or that kind of runway, I should say, for like the Monsters of the Week and the Interdimensional Cables and stuff like that, which God damn it. God fucking damn it. We still haven't got an Interdimensional Cable. But like for this lore stuff, like I'm glad they spent a lot of time. It's, you know, getting back to the evil Morty and having side things with like Cyborg Beth and stuff, because I pretty highly, you know, I remember when we had the story conductor, the story train, like how people said, oh, look at this epic canon. And like, you know, like what if we just we'd be happy just to get that, like just straight up. But like that's such a more stupid version of what we actually got.
Yeah.
You know, like just, oh, a literal evil Morty, a dark emperor Morty, you know, that's corrupted Mr. Poopy Butthole and all, like that's such a more stupid version than what we actually got. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they're taking their time. And like it sounds like they really did sweat the details, like everything had to pay off. I think it worked. Like I said,
yeah,
great Rick and Morty. So I'm hyped for season 6. I have no idea when it'll be back. Like I said, I would like to cover this as long as we have the time and as long as it doesn't stack up on top of like Lord of the Rings and the Fire and Blood or the House of the Dragon project and Expanse and Foundation season 2 and For All Mankind season 3 and all the other shit that I want to cover too. But Rick and Morty has a special place in my heart, and as long as they're making it and it's good, I would like to keep covering it.
Yeah.
I'm sad it's over, but I got nothing else to say. So we will leave it at that. We'll see you back in the next season. If you would like to get more Bald Move in your life, we're currently doing the last season, final season, The Walking Dead. We're about to start up, speaking of science fiction with like some real crazy mind blowing implications, we're about to start Foundation, a new series on Apple TV Plus that we're really excited about, starring Jared Harris and Lee Pace. If you haven't seen the trailers, you should check it out. It's pretty amazing. The Boys should be coming out pretty soon. The Expanse should be coming back fourth quarter this year. Lots of great Bald Move stuff. We usually do a movie every week. Check us out at baldmove.com. Subscribe to us on Pulp or Prestige, whichever your personal tastes are, and keep the good times going. But if not, we'll see you back in season 6. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later, everybody.
Pickle Me This is distributed and produced by Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com.
If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at patreon.com/baldmove
to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at baldmove. See you next time.